Are live now. Welcome to Bible Quest. This is the Wednesday edition. And what am I doing, Jeff? Am I saying something wrong? you don't see Jeff yet, but he's laughing at me.
I'm just thinking, for what we pay you, we should get a little bit more professionalism in the introduction.
Oh, yes. Anyway, today's the Wednesday program. We're glad everyone's joining us on this Wednesday afternoon. Interesting topic today. From what I've been told, and I'm just going to turn right over to you, Jeff. Jeff, go ahead. Who's coming in today, Jeff?
Yeah, I guess I am. And you know what? That professionalism uptick right there. I think we're going to have to triple your pay this week.
Thank you.
So we're going to do something that we ought to do every now and then today. We're just going to talk about what the Bible is. If you're listening to this webcast and you're familiar with the Bible, you know what? A lot of what we say is going to be review to you, but it might be useful to you just to think about how to explain what the Bible is to somebody who's not familiar with it. And if you are not familiar with the Bible, maybe you've done a search online for introduction to the Bible, something like that. In fact, Drew, we ought to put introduction to the Bible in the notes there so that when people search, they might find this. That's what we're going to do. We're just going to talk about what the Bible is. And what prompted this is I heard somebody talking about the Bible as a just, well, it's Christianity's holy book. And the reporter who was using that kind of language said it in such a way that I got the impression the reporter probably knew nothing about the Bible and just, well, various religions have some kind of writings and whatever they are, who knows, but the Bible is Christianity's. So there are a lot of people who don't know what's in the Bible. So let's just talk about what the Bible is. Let's spend a little bit of time talking about the Old Testament, the New Testament. Those are both parts of the Bible. So one time, years ago, I was having a Bible study with a couple sitting at the kitchen table, and I had been going on for, I don't know, 20 minutes or so, and the fella, he stops me after a little bit, married couple, he stops me, and he says, can I ask a question? I said, sure. He said, this Old Testament and New Testament you keep talking about, are they both in the Bible? And I realized then that I had made some assumptions. I had tried to not make any assumptions, back up and just start from square one, but I had not gotten all the way back to square one. So do you have a way that you like to introduce the Bible to somebody when you have the sense they don't know anything about it?
Yeah, I do. And I'll allow Joe to go first. Sorry, I shouldn't have just jumped in. Joe, go ahead. You've been teaching for a lot longer than I have.
I don't know that I have a better idea than you do. But thanks for mentioning my name, Chase. It's nice to you know, have that acknowledgement that we didn't get at the beginning of the show. But anyway, so
you're off to a really rough start today.
So usually what I would do is just try to present the Bible and just say that it is a set of books that really begin with the creation of the world. And it's a set of history books. And there are within those historical books, God speaking to man in various ways, maybe even mention something like Hebrews 1:1, but that all of the Old Testament is, in effect, pointing toward the coming of the Messiah, the coming of Christ. And so as we read from the creation of the world all the way through, and it's kind of getting us closer and closer to the coming of Christ. In fact, one of the things that I've done in some of the classes, I just did this a while back in a group of men. We have a Bible study that we have in a local prison. And I talked about how when my wife teaches children's classes, that she will present the Old Testament as these books of the Bible that are saying Jesus is coming. And when we start at the beginning of the Bible, you know, it'll be sort of a whisper, just a little hint, Jesus is coming, like Genesis 3. Mm-hmm. And then it'll get a little bit louder in places like Genesis 12. Jesus is coming. Mm-hmm. And we just walk through the Bible story. And by the time we get to the end of the Old Testament, it's screaming, Jesus is coming. And then we turn to the New Testament, and there's John the Baptist, the one crying out in the wilderness. That's been kind of a helpful way I think at least to get the big picture.
I like that. And if I can just encapsulate what you said there, you've got a collection of books. There's 66 books in our Bibles, individual books. They're written by roughly 40 different writers over a time span of about 1,400 years, time span of about 1,500 years. And yet, as you go through these writings, they do give a history of God's dealing with mankind, and especially of God's dealing with the nation of Israel. But what that's all about is this idea of Jesus is coming. And it's quiet at first, and then it gets more and more pronounced and more clear, and you get to the latter books, and then there's Jesus. Chase, how do you introduce it?
So often what I'll do is I'll have a stack of Bibles that I use for people I studied the Bible with for the first time. If they don't have one, I will just sit down with them and open up to the table of contents of the Bible. Mm-hmm. And I will just say there's two testaments, Old Testament and New Testament, and those can be divided up in kind of the centuries that have gone by. The New Testament was written in the last 2,000 years, but all in that first century. And then the Old Testament spans before that. But then what I'll have them do is I'll have them go through and I'll have them kind of bracket books and circle them and write out to the next, to the side of them. So with the first five books of the Bible, I might have them bracket those and say, these are the books of history. This is all about the origins of the Jewish people and how God brought them out of Egypt and how God organized them as a people. And then I'll have them circle Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles, and we'll call that the history of God's people in the land of Israel. And then just kind of go through the big sections of the Bible like that. And sometimes that'll be my whole first study with somebody if they're really just wanting to have an overview of what the whole Bible is about. I found that to be helpful.
So if we do this, if we say, okay, there was a man named Jesus who was crucified 2,000 years ago and raised from the dead, and he was the Son of God. Now, he lived on earth about 2,000 years ago. Most of the Bible was written before he lived on the earth, mm-hmm. and that's what we call the Old Testament. That's 39 of the 66 books of the Bible were written before he lived on the earth. And they were written over a time span of about 1,400 years before he lived on the earth. Actually, not that much. Actually, we could say about 1,000 years. But they describe events all the way back to the very beginning of time. And they describe how God created everything, and man sinned, and then starting right then, God starts hinting, well, I've got a plan to fix this. And as you go through all those 39 books that were written before Jesus, you see God's dealing with the nation of Israel to bring Jesus into the world as a means of taking away man's sin. And then you get to the story of Jesus' life, and you have the beginning of the New Testament. There are 27 books that talk about his life, the work that his apostles, his disciples did as they went out preaching the gospel, and then letters that were written, directed by God to various churches and individuals. And that would be the New Testament. So let's talk a little bit about the Old Testament scriptures, the 39 books that were written before Jesus came into the world. And we can divide those up into sections. And the first section would be what? And what would that section be about? Wow, I must not have asked the question very well. The Pentateuch is what I'm talking about. These people talk about the Torah, the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Old Testament, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. So let's just quickly, high level, what are found in those first five books? Start with Genesis.
So the word Genesis means beginning. And that's kind of a helpful way of summarizing what's in that book. There's the beginning of the world, the beginning of marriage, the beginning of sin, the beginning of nations, the beginning of the promises that God gives to the patriarchs. I understand. Well, I'll just leave it at that. I think by just seeing the title of it, that at least helps you to capture some of the things that are listed there.
Exodus would be the same way. So you have an exit. So the end of Genesis has, of course, someone wrote in and said also the beginning of languages. That's another good one in Genesis 11 in the Tower of Babel. But Exodus, they're literally exiting Egypt. It starts with the 10 plagues. And we actually talked about that last week, didn't we, Jeff, when we were talking about Passover? Would have been great to have Joe here for that. But glad he's back now, I guess. But, and then, of course, Joe, what would you say about Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy?
Well, the title Leviticus means pertaining to the priest, but that's our title, not the title that was originally connected with the book, right? And so as we think about the things that are in Leviticus, it's the establishing of worship, I think, would be one of the key thoughts that is presented in Leviticus. Numbers, well, the title sort of reveals for us, you have a counting, a census that is at the beginning of the book of Numbers and at the end of the book of Numbers. And so the title Numbers is pretty handy there. Deuteronomy, the giving of the law to the second generation, the telling of those, telling the law to those who are going to go into the promised land.
And then after those five books, then we have Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1st and 2nd Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. And those books kind of give a description of the history of the Israelite people, all from the time that they come into the land God gave them until they get carried out of that land because of their unfaithfulness to God. And they are carried away to live in other nations, and until some of them are allowed, or they all are allowed to come back, and some of them do come back. So those books describe a history of God's dealings with this nation of Israel.
And sometimes what I'll have people do is, as I have them go through the table of contents, once you get to Esther, I'll have them put a little bit of a line underneath Esther, because from Genesis to Esther, it's pretty well chronological as the books are arranged. And obviously there's some exceptions to that. Kings and Chronicles are retelling some of the same stories, just from different perspectives and for different historical reasons. But for the most part, that's your history of the Old Testament, is Genesis to Esther. Mm-hmm. And then maybe back Malachi on at the very end. But I think that's helpful for people to realize, because they just naturally assume, well, it's chronological. So Genesis is the first thing that happened, and then Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi is the last thing that happened. Well, if that's your understanding, you're going to get really confused when you get into, you go from Esther to Job.
So, all right. So starting with Genesis and going all the way up through Esther, you have this history, the beginning of time, the beginning of creation, the beginning of sin, the beginning of God's revelation that he's going to solve the problem of sin. And then the story of the God's dealing with the nation of Israel. And we get all the way through all of that. And then we get into a section of the Old Testament where we have some books like Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. And these actually, all of these books are a different style of literature, aren't they?
They are, yeah. It's what we often call the wisdom literature. Sometimes people will call it poetry. But I think wisdom is probably more appropriate for the
why do you think? I mean, obviously it is poetry. All of those books, for the most part, are written in poetic form. Why would you emphasize calling it wisdom literature?
Well, I think mainly because it's not simply poetry. When we think about poetry, that sort of brings up an image in our minds of rhyme or whatever.
Roses are red, violets are blue.
I can't speak, and neither can you, something like that. This is revealing so many practical lessons. The book of Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, so many practical lessons. Psalms teaches us how to pray and how to think. It helps us to form emotions as we're speaking to and about God. Job reveals wisdom and how to deal with suffering. Yeah. And reliance upon the Lord. Song of Solomon, a bit more challenging book, at least for me, but one that describes love.
Yeah, marital love. And I would just say those five books, they're all on this spectrum of wisdom. That's what I love. They're each unique, and they address different aspects of wisdom on a spectrum. It's pretty cool.
And I guess, strictly speaking, I said most of these are all in poetic form. Ecclesiastes has some poetic forms in it, but for the most part, Ecclesiastes is not structurally, it's not poetic, right?
Not all. No, yeah, not all the parts of it, certainly. Yeah.
All right, so we got a lot of the Old Testament. You have the beginning of time. You have God's dealing with the nation of Israel and all of that history. And then you get into these wisdom books. Mm-hmm. Then after that, we have a bunch of prophets: Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, and so on, all the way down to Malachi. And what are these about?
So typically what I'll do with people when we get to these in the table of contents, I explain it this way. Now, everything else you see, we can take and bam, we can sprinkle them all into 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles, and parts of Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. And because, again, they're not chronological, but these are prophets. And sometimes what I like to do, because we call them prophets, and if you're talking to someone that's new to the Bible, it's totally understandable. When they hear prophet, what do they normally assume?
Predicting the future.
Yeah, and there are certainly elements of that in these prophets. There's no getting around that. And a lot of the things that they say are going to happen as a result of Israel's sin do end up happening. But sometimes I'll help them by saying, don't think of these guys just as much as a prophet, as much as they really were preachers. They were trying to get God's people to do a certain thing, or a Gentile nation to do a certain thing, in the case of Nahum and Obadiah and Jonah. So anyways, that's how I've often described it. You sprinkle these in to 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles.
Now, Joe, going back to a comment that you made earlier, you talked about, I think you were talking about when Beth teaches children's classes, she's, you know, the Old Testament starts out, Jesus is coming, and then Jesus is coming, Jesus is coming, as you go through the Bible. So let's just real quickly, and let's not take more than 3 or 4 minutes to do this, but let's just think through, starting with the first books of the Bible, in a sentence, tell me something in Genesis that is hinting Jesus is coming.
The offering up of Isaac by Abraham, great foretelling, a great picture of what's going to happen to Jesus on the cross as he's taken up to the very same mountain, and the Father is going to offer up the Son.
The curse to the serpent, he will strike your head, and then you will strike his heel.
Sure.
Yeah, those are two different things. And the one that Joe's talking about, of course, there's really a pre-enactment of God giving his Son as a sacrifice, and his Son being raised from the dead. God has Abraham act that out. And of course, Abraham is not aware, at least we would suppose, he's not aware of the full meaning of what he's doing, but he does use the phrase, the Lord will provide. And that's what the story is about. God is going to provide a solution to the problem of sin. And so we come to the book of Exodus. This, of course, is when Abraham's descendants have become a nation, and yet they're slaves in Egypt. And so God's going to bring them out and give them this land, this promised land. Tell me something in the book of Exodus that is looking forward to Jesus coming.
Well, let's take it back to last week's episode on Passover. Kill an unblemished lamb, put the blood on the doorpost, and I will pass over you. Okay. So just the idea of sacrificing something innocent so that the death angel doesn't come to you.
And then, of course, in the book of Exodus, you have the giving of the Ten Commandments and the law of Moses, all this code by which the Israelites would live. Tell me something in the law that is about Jesus coming. Of course, all of it is, really, but give me an example.
Of something in the tabernacle. The book of Hebrews will really fill in a lot of those blanks for us about how, as we look back at things that are in the law, for example, how they were pointing to the greatness of Jesus coming.
And the book of Leviticus is a lot of legislation about worship. You talk about Joe and about sacrifice. Tell me something in the book of Leviticus that looks forward to Jesus coming.
So there's a statement that's made in Leviticus 1-7. It's made several times, once about every sacrifice, that it is a sweet smelling aroma to the Lord. And then we turn to the New Testament and we see that the offering of Christ is a sweet smelling aroma to the Lord, Ephesians 5 and in verses 1-2.
So we could look at those animal sacrifices, rightly look at those animal sacrifices of the Old Testament and see them as instructing man in the concept of a sacrifice, a life that is given to make atonement, to take away sin. All right, so we don't have to go through each of those books to illustrate that point, but I just wanted to drive that home. Go ahead, Chase.
I thought you were going to have us do it. That is a very helpful exercise, though. That is a very good exercise to do. Just off the top of your head, go through every book of the Bible in the Old Testament and see how it points to Jesus.
Yeah, good. All right. So we've got a handle on the Old Testament now. Just a brief introduction. You've got 39 books, all written before Jesus comes into the world. The last of them probably written about 400 years before Jesus comes into the world. And then we get to the rest of the Bible, which is what we call the New Testament. And these 27 books are written over a time span of only 100 years, just within one century. So the Old Testament, the first 39 books of the Bible, they were written over a 1,000-year period. I said 1,400 years a moment ago, or 1,400, but that really includes the time period between the end of the Old Testament writings and Jesus coming into the world. So really, the Old Testament scriptures were written over about a 1,000-year time period. And then the New Testament scriptures, once Jesus comes into the world, is just a century, 100 years. And the New Testament, I think we can divide up into three parts. You might want to divide it up into four. The three parts I would have in mind would be four books that tell the life of Jesus, one that tells about the message of Jesus being spread throughout the world, and then a whole bunch of letters. And so the first four books that tell the life of Jesus, what are they and why do we have four and what are the differences between them?
We have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. All are telling the story of the life of Christ from different perspectives, different vantage points. Nothing in contradiction, but complementing one another. Different purposes in their writing. Very likely even having in mind different audiences primarily. John, I think, is maybe the easiest one to see that in. He tells us that he left a lot of things out, but that he included what he did to prove that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And so they all have things in common. They're all telling about the life of Christ, but they have different aspects or different parts of Jesus' life that they are emphasizing.
So Matthew, what was his occupation?
Tax collector.
And what did he become for Jesus?
An apostle.
He became one of the 12 that Jesus specially trained, called apostles, Jesus was going to send them out into the world. Mark, who was Mark?
We presume, I mean, it's the same Mark that we read about in the book of Acts, who is described as a young man in Acts chapter 12. He's also a preaching companion of Paul's at some times, and in others he's not. But he was prolific in the early church in the book of Acts.
Luke and connected with Peter as well.
Yeah. My son Mark, yeah, and then his second Peter, or first Good. Peter, second Peter.
All right, so he had a close connection with one of the apostles. Who was Luke?
A doctor.
Physician and co-traveler with Paul, co-worker with Paul, the apostle. And so Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they all write accounts of Jesus' time on earth, very similar accounts, cover a lot of the same events, but there's a little bit of a different slant to each one, especially maybe in terms of what is emphasized and maybe the audience they had in mind. John, who was John?
John was an apostle of Jesus Christ as well. He was John, the son of Zebedee. His brother James and him were mentioned together quite often, nicknamed the Sons of Thunder, the Sons of Boanerges by Jesus. They were fishermen that Jesus had called to follow him at the beginning of the Gospels.
So those are your four books that tell the life of Jesus, and they tell about the crucifixion and the resurrection, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
And they're named after the person who wrote
them. Yeah, we call them by the name of the person who wrote them. That's right. So then Luke has a second volume. He writes what we call the Gospel of Luke, the life of Jesus. But then he has a second volume where he writes an account of the gospel being spread after Jesus goes back up to heaven. And he focuses especially upon the work of two men. Who are those two men?
Mainly Peter at the beginning, and then Paul, the latter half, slightly more.
And one way to think of the book of Acts is also that the first part of the book of Acts is especially the gospel among the Jews in and around Jerusalem. And then the latter part of the book of Acts is the spreading of the gospel throughout the world to Gentiles. And so you have a historical account of that. Chase, you said earlier that when we're in the Old Testament, you can think of the prophets as sprinkled in amongst the history. The New Testament is kind of like that also, because after we get past the book of Acts, you've got all these letters, and they're kind of sprinkled into the history that's described in the book of Acts.
Yeah, and one of those things you just sometimes don't notice until I heard another preacher going through the table of contents with a new person to the Bible. So right after the book of Acts, you have 14 letters that were all written by the Apostle Paul. The first seven are named after the recipients, so who he is sending them to, the cities in which those churches exist. And then the seven after that are named after the recipients, the individuals that Paul is writing to. So the first seven are cities, like churches that he's writing to, and then the last seven are like actual individual people that he's writing to.
Okay, let's test that. First, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians. Wouldn't 1st?
Oh, and sorry. Yeah, I guess I'm off. I apologize.
Unless he's counting 1st and 2nd Corinthians as one.
Yeah, I apologize. I think I did that. I did those off. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Nine and five.
Yeah, 9 and 5. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. Okay. And so you have the letters to the churches and then letters to the individuals that Paul writes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you would have 1st and 2nd Timothy, Titus, and Philemon. So that would be
four.
Yeah. Four. Sorry. Yeah, I did my math way wrong on that. I'm sorry. Good thing we're preachers, not mathematicians.
All right. But when you think about Romans, we can locate within the book of Acts, which tells about the spread of the gospel throughout the world and the work of Peter and Paul. And within the book of Acts, you can locate where Romans was written. You can locate where 1 Corinthians was written. You can locate where 2 Corinthians was written. Galatians, you can see the beginnings of the churches of Galatia that Paul has in mind when he writes the letter of Galatians. You can see the beginnings of those churches when Paul first went and preached to them in Acts chapters 13, 14, for example. And so you see this interplay, this interrelation between the letters that are written to these various churches and the history of many of those churches as described in the book of Acts. Okay. And then you've got some letters to some individuals. Talk about those just a little bit.
1st and 2nd Timothy and Titus are younger evangelists. 1st and 2nd Timothy are not two different Timothys, two letters to the same individual. But Timothy and Titus are young evangelists that Paul is writing to encourage and admonish in what they ought to be teaching in the churches in which they are working in Ephesus and Crete.
And unfortunately, some circles refer to these as the pastorals. And I like to think it's because it mentions the qualifications for a pastor in 1 Timothy and Titus. But unfortunately, that's not why. But Timothy is called an evangelist in 1 Timothy 4. And Titus would be similar. So,
And then of course, you have Philemon, which is Paul writing to a Christian named Philemon about a man named Onesimus, who was a slave, had run away and come to Paul and has become a Christian. And now he's going back to Philemon. And Hebrews, won't take a lot of time to talk about Hebrews right now. James, 1st, 2nd Peter, 1st and 2nd, 3rd John, Jude. What do you want to say about those?
Well, they're named after who's writing them. So Paul's letters are written or named after who he's writing to. These are named after who wrote them.
Okay. And then finally, you have the book of Revelation. And the book of Revelation is actually a letter or letters. The Lord tells John to write to seven churches. If you were going to just sum up what the book of Revelation is about, how would you do it, Joe?
Jesus wins.
So it's written at a time when the Christians are suffering. There's conflict with the Roman Empire and culture. And there's this encouraging message, Jesus wins. Good. All right. So kind of walked all the way through the whole Bible here. Oh, go ahead.
I'll just make one more comment. If you said it, I'm sorry, Jeff. First, second, third John and Revelation, you said are written by John. And this is the same John that wrote the Gospel John.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Good. Now, so the Old Testament scriptures, there were some rules for Jews to live by. What book in the Bible lists, where do you go in the New Testament to find just the list of rules, the thou shalt and thou shalt nots, where do you find that book in the New Testament where there's, you got all these stories and stuff we've been talking about and letters, but where's the stuff like the list of rules that we have to follow in the New Testament?
Sure, it's right at the very beginning of the New Testament in Matthew, chapters 5-7.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
I know that's not the answer you were looking for, but it was too easy. It was low hanging fruit.
Tell us about chapter 5-7 of the book of Matthew.
Yeah. So that's called the Sermon on the Mount, appropriately so. And within that sermon, the longest sermon recorded by our Lord, he does go through and he has lists, like at the beginning of Matthew 5:1-12, the Beatitudes. And those are instructions on how to live. They are not so much a thou shalt and thou shalt not, like maybe the Ten Commandments, but they are showing the character of the person who will be a citizen of the kingdom of God.
Yeah, it's a picture of kingdom living. It's kind of a description of the code by which people in God's kingdom will live. Yeah. All right, so now give me the answer I was looking for.
Go ahead, Jace.
There isn't one. So the New Testament is, I mean, you have to read all of it. And let me say, it's a very, let me get my sentence straight. That is a task that can be accomplished with ease. Take some discipline, but you can read through the New Testament. If you read, I think it's 7 chapters a day, you'll read through the New Testament in less than 2 months. So it takes some discipline, but the New Testament can be read through, I think, at a much quicker clip and pace than the Old Testament can. And so when you read through it in its entirety, yeah, you're going to run into different kinds of commandments depending on the kind of dialogue or narrative that's going on. Is that fair?
Yeah. So in other words, what I'm getting at here, of course, is that rather than just giving us a rule book, God has given us a narrative. He's given us instruction about how people became Christians, about how churches were organized. He's given us examples of letters where Paul or John or Peter had to write to Christians to correct misunderstandings, to give admonition, to give instruction, and all of those things then become our guidebook, how we are to live. I'd like to go back and I'd like to have you guys reconcile. So Joe said, well, there is a section, Matthew chapter 5-7, and that's the code. And Chase, you said there isn't one, and you're both right, but reconcile those two for me.
Well, I think in some ways the Old Testament even does a very similar thing. You have the law of Moses that is described, and then you come along and have the prophets that are explaining to the people the things that they need, that they should have understood from those very things that are in the law of Moses. And you have the books of history that show people either following or not following what God had told Moses. In the New Testament, you have the gospel accounts, the life of Christ that is painting this picture for us of the ideal servant, the ideal son, the ideal child of God. And then you have the history book of Acts that is showing examples of people that obey and don't obey. And then the letters to the Christians, written mainly by apostles, sort of like the prophets of old, who were explaining to churches how they ought to behave in accordance with the instructions that Jesus had given them.
I will say the exception to that, I don't know if it's an exception because I don't disagree with Joe, is apostolic authority. And so those writers are going to handle things that Jesus didn't necessarily handle, things that I don't think the church would have been able to work through if it wasn't for the apostles to come in. And I'll give you a great example of that. I think the teaching of circumcision in the book of Galatians. I mean, Paul has to kind of get in their face and say, if you're receiving circumcision and thinking that's what saves you, you're sinning. And he says, you cannot do that. And so there are tenets of the gospels in all of the epistles, but there are certainly places where the apostles will come in and hand out doctrine and say, here's the way it is in the church.
Sure. All right. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
No, I'm just complete agreement. They're not exactly parallels, but they're also just not completely separate and apart in their approaches, if you will.
So now we think a little bit about, okay, what part of the Bible is relevant to us today? And one take that some would have is, well, we're Christians, we follow Jesus Christ, so it's the New Testament writings. It's the writings about Jesus' life, and it's the writings about how Christians, after he went up back up to heaven, functioned, that are important to us. And of course, that's true. But let's take a moment. What is the value of the Old Testament scriptures to us today? What value is there for us to go back and read the writings that were written before Jesus ever came into the world for us today? And there are a lot of answers to that, but I'd like to highlight some.
Two that I try to emphasize when I'm, again, just sort of giving an overview. 1 Corinthians 10 teaches us that when we study the Old Testament scriptures, that they were written for our benefit, to learn to not rebel, to not be greedy, and so forth, and to recognize that God is going to deal with people who disobey. We need to be careful, take heed, he who stands lest he fall. And then Romans 15, the other side of that, the beginning of Romans 15, teaches us that by studying the Old Testament, we can understand the God of patience, and that it offers us hope as we study through those things.
Yeah, good. I like the way you put those two together as two sides of a coin, the passage in 1 Corinthians 10 and the passage in Romans 15. And so summing that up, what you have in the Old Testament is we get a picture of God's dealing with man and how man needs to take seriously God's word. Sin gets him in trouble with God, but at the same time, to understand that God is a God of compassion and a God who wants to save us and who offers us hope. So you learn that as you go through the Old Testament writings. What's something else that we get out of the Old Testament?
Go ahead, Jeff.
One thing that we've already hit on was the concept of sacrifice. There are some profound concepts that we need to understand if we're going to understand Jesus' sacrifice, why it was necessary for him to die on the cross. And those concepts are established in the Old Testament ritual, liturgy, whatever you want to call it, of the Israelites, which was defined in, for example, Exodus and Leviticus and Deuteronomy. And so you have these concepts of where there is sin, there has to be a sacrifice and there has to be bloodshed. We've destroyed a life by our sin, our own lives, and it's going to take a sacrifice of a life to fix that. And you also get the concept of intercession. There needs to be an intercessor, a mediator, somebody who can stand between man and God and advocate for man. And you see that idea developed in the Old Testament priesthood, the priests that were legislated under the law of Moses. You see this concept of God's holiness and the idea of God saying, I'm going to take a people, a group of people on earth, and define them as my people. But if they're going to be my people, because I am holy, they are going to have to be holy. And of course, in the Old Testament, that people was the nation of Israel. But that is kind of an object lesson to teach about God's New Testament people, those who are in Christ Jesus. And they're going to have to be holy. They can't make themselves holy. God makes them holy through the sacrifice of Jesus. But then he calls upon them to live in sanctification. And so these kinds of concepts, they're really fairly profound concepts, and yet God hammers them home in both the law and his dealings with the Old Testament nation of Israel. So those are some kinds of things the Old Testament is valued for.
There's a passage, just to go along with what you're saying, Jeff. It says in Galatians 3:24, the law then was our guardian or tutor until Christ, so that we could be justified by faith. All those things point to, they help us learn things. And my answer was going to be the Old Testament. It shows us the character of God. And I think what you said about God's holiness, mm-hmm. God's desire for us to be holy, and how he reacts when we're not doing and being the people he said he asked, or that he asked us to be, that is all stressed very, very well in the Old Testament. So
go ahead, Joe.
Well, just one other point. So I mentioned the negative and the positives that we can learn in 1 Corinthians 10 and Romans 15. Another way of approaching that part would be a passage like Hebrews 11. If we want to understand what faith is, the Hebrew writer is begging us, go back and study the heroes of the Old Testament. Sometimes Hebrews 11 is called the Hall of Fame of Faith. And then the other side of that one then would be the book of Jude, which has been termed the Hall of Shame. You have the people out of the land of Egypt, you have Sodom and Gomorrah, you have Cain, you have Balaam, you have Korah, you have all these examples of people who did wickedly in the Old Testament. And Jude is saying, you need to learn from these people. Don't imitate them. So just so many values. The character of God, I think, is a great point to make. But connected to that, then, is what God demands of our character.
There's another thing in the Old Testament that is valuable to us today, and that is that we see God is God of all the nations, and he holds nations accountable. Repeatedly in the Old Testament, you will see, whether it's in the prophets or elsewhere, but especially in the prophets, you'll see a description of God's saying, I'm going to bring judgment on this nation. I'm going to bring judgment on that nation. I'm going to bring judgment on the nation of Israel. And there'll be an itemization of the things they've done wrong. There'll be things like violence. There'll be things like idolatry, where man worships an image that's not even anything real. And so it's really just a reflection of his own ideas, his own desires. And so it's really man making himself his own God. But when man does those things, when a culture, when a society becomes characterized by those kinds of things, God says, if they don't repent, I'm going to bring judgment upon them. And there's an expression in the Old Testament we see repeatedly, it's day of the Lord. And so there's a day of the Lord that comes upon this nation or that nation. And all of that prefigures a final day of the Lord that's going to come at the end of time, when all the nations are going to be judged by God, and only those who are in Christ are going to be redeemed, are going to be spared, are going to be saved. And so one of the big ideas you get in the Old Testament is this, I use the word accountability. God is going to hold man accountable. He held the nations accountable in the Old Testament, and he is going to hold the whole world accountable at some point in the future.
Excellent.
All right. Anything else you want to cap it off with before we wrap it up for today? We've covered the whole Bible in 45 minutes.
Get the Bible, start reading it, and always, this is called Bible Quest, so you can reach out to any one of us if you want to know more about the Bible.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. I don't expect to be with you next week, but Lord willing, those of you who are listening, will get a chance to catch Joe and Chase next week. Thank you for being with us today on Bible Quest.
Well, thanks a lot, Jeff. Now no one's going to want to come.